nothing lasts forever. We're all going to die. This is all very short. So having that perspective kind of makes you be like, what? We're not around for that long. Probably should make the most of it and be happy.
Aishwarya Iyer is the founder and CEO of Brightland, a company dedicated to producing high-quality artisanal olive oils, vinegars, and honeys with vibrant designs. Since its inception in 2018, she has steered Brightland to the forefront of the industry, emphasizing transparency, quality, and sustainable sourcing. Under her leadership, Brightland has not only captivated culinary enthusiasts with its flavorful products, but also expanded its offerings to enhance the modern kitchen. Get ready to hear Aishwarya's story and her biggest business secrets. Coming up, you'll hear how Aishwarya was able to achieve personal growth and her tips for overcoming self-doubt. Aishwarya shares her process for raising capital and why it's so important to choose the right investors. You'll hear all about Brightland's marketing and growth strategy. And finally, Aishwarya reveals her biggest business secrets. This is the Entrepreneurista podcast, presented by Socialfly.
It's the best business meeting you'll ever have, with must-hear real-life looks at how leading women in business are getting it done
and what it takes to build and grow a successful company.
It's beyond the gram.
With no filters,
no limits,
and plenty of surprises. Aishwarya, we are so excited to chat with you today and hear all about your entrepreneurial journey, your story. You have built this incredible business over the past few years. So we want to hear how you did it all. But before we get to that, I would love to hear, as you were growing up, did you always know that you ultimately wanted to start your own business one day?
Well, first of all, Courtney and Stephanie, thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited. It's a Friday afternoon that we're doing this, and it's the highlight of my week. So no, I did not. I was not a lemonade stand kid. I was not a, you know, trading baseball cards or any kind of trading cards. Like, I wasn't doing any of that. I was really into playing with teddy bears, hosting little tea parties for my dolls. Like, I just lived this creative, really, I think, like, feminine sort of childhood. And then as I got older, I don't think I dreamt as big as I realized I could. Mm. I was like, oh, I'm going to be an eye doctor and live like a street away from where my parents lived. And I had picked out the office that I would be doing the eye doctoring in. And it was, you know, across from my high school. Like, I sort of was just like playing it safe and living small. So I like to tell people that I live a much bigger life than I ever thought I could have.
How did you get to that place where you started to think and dream big? And when you just said that, and sorry, Courtney, I just jumped in because I had to share this right now. I was listening this morning to Ed Milet's podcast, and he was talking all about this, about dreaming big and thinking big, and that so many people just don't think that way. How did you get to that place?
I'm a child of immigrants. So I think part of it was also this notion of playing it safe. Right? We come to this country and we're like, great, very grateful, very happy. And there's almost this like feeling of, let's just do things right, check the right boxes and play it safe. And that's success. So I think for me, the reframe really happened when I moved to New York to go to NYU. You know, Courtney, we were just talking, both of us are NYU alums, which I love. I mean, that changed everything. I grew up in the suburbs of Houston, Texas, and had some exposure. You know, we were in somewhat of a city, but New York just opened me up to the sheer possibility of what could be. And to be surrounded by people who are thinking and dreaming so big, I think allowed me to think that I had the audacity to as well.
Yeah, I remember when I was at NYU, one of my best friends decided to start a company while she was at NYU. So that really exposed me to the possibility that you don't have to go to work and work in corporate America. You can actually start something as early as being in college. So I agree with you. NYU really opened up my mind to that. Yeah. How did you get the idea for Brightland though? Like, walk us through. You're at NYU, you're being exposed to all these different things.
Yeah.
You graduate. What happened?
I graduated. I worked in the beauty industry for a bit at L'Oreal, and then I worked in tech. I worked a number of startups. And I think that's where being nimble, being scrappy, like all of those values lodged big chips in my brain. And I come from a family of super passionate, very judgmental home cooks. And it was one of those things where I knew that food was everything. And it's even now, it's like the topic du jour all the time. And so I never thought that I would be in the food industry, but it was such a foundational element of my life. But then I ran away from it in my 20s. I never cooked. I participated in New York restaurant culture, and that's how my love of food manifested. But then in my late 20s, I started cooking more, and I started thinking about, oh, where's the cheese coming from? Where is the kale coming from? Where is each ingredient? Like, just being more intentional and thoughtful, and realized that there was this one ingredient that was in every single thing that I ate, the cooking oil, that I had no idea where it was coming from, had never given it a second thought. But it's not just some random hot sauce you're using once in a while. It is in everything.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, wait, where is this coming from? Who made it? When was it made? How is it made? How come I'm not able to like really answer that? And then when I asked friends, everyone would tell me how much they loved olive oil, especially. I love olive oil. And then I'd be like, oh, where'd you get your bottle from? And they're like, I have no idea. You know, I bought it 2-4 months ago somewhere. It's a green, ugly bottle. And so that also lodged some kind of like, I think there's something here chip in my brain. And then I was Googling, you know, bad olive oil, good olive oil. And apparently the Italian mafia was involved many years ago in the olive oil industry and in fraud and things like that. Like, who knows? But it was interesting enough that it piqued my, like, it was very intriguing. And that set me down the path of, I'm going to learn more about this industry and this category. I think there might be something here. But, you know, I had spent time in tech and I just did not think that I was the person to tell that story. I had a lot of that inner critic, like self-doubt, and also this feeling of I'm not enough. I'm not smart enough. I'm not popular enough. I'm not well-known enough. Like, I'm not an influencer. I'm not some like big restaurant chef. Just this random lady living in New York and then moved to LA wanting to start this thing. And I just didn't think it was maybe my story to tell. And so I'm sure people listening can resonate with that. And I had to do my own work inside to come to that like moment of it's okay for you to want to tell the story.
What type of work did you do to get to that place?
Oh my gosh, some of it was like going back to my inner child and teenager and, you know, almost like writing a note, like a love note to that person and saying, it's okay. And you are enough and smart enough and good enough. I think some of it was digging really deep into the concept of fear. Like, I had this fear of, well, everyone's going to laugh. And then it was like, who's everyone? Right? Whenever people say that, they're like, well, everyone's going to say this about me. I'm like, who is everyone? And usually people can pinpoint it to like one person that there are two people they're actually thinking about. And a lot of cases, it's like the person that made fun of you in seventh grade or the friend who's no longer a friend who you like, who takes up way too much space in your brain and they shouldn't. And so once you're able to pinpoint that, and for me, I had to do that, I was able to take a step back and be like, oh, it actually doesn't matter. And we're not that important. People are not thinking about us that much. They're just not. They have their own lives. And so it was that feeling, like kind of that revelation. And then at the end of the day, it was me. Like, it's a lot of what we put onto other people of like, they're going to think that about me. We think that about ourselves. Mm-hmm. And so it was a lot of work around like giving myself grace.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was a lot of like, I guess, like past and present work. And then the future work was thinking about myself when I was 75 and if I would have the regret. And if I really felt that, like, kind of sitting with myself at the age of 75, would I regret that I didn't at least try? And I was like screaming, yes, you're going to regret it. So I said, let me try.
That exercise that you just described is very freeing, actually, if you go through it and really look at your fears and question why you're scared of XYZ. Yeah. How did you know to do that? Did you go to a workshop? Did you Google it? Did you have a therapist? Mm. Because if everyone did this exercise, then I think people would overcome a lot of the fears that are holding them back and prohibiting them from thinking big.
Some of it was through, I went to a conference called Summit Series, and I heard a couple of people speak, and that was really, I think, eye-opening for me. And then I ended up, a friend told me about a life coach that they worked with, and I thought it was very, you know, coming from New York, I was like, that is so woo and insane. But I did it, and we did, like, I think 8 sessions together, and it totally transformed my life, because she had me do a vision board, and we talked through what the vision board really was. And I do annual vision boards now, and they really set the tone for me for how I want to show up in that year. And I usually give myself and the business a word every year. And it, a lot of times the word has come from that vision board too.
Tell us about your 2024 vision, and what is your word this year?
My word this year is energy, because energy can neither be created nor can it be destroyed. It can only be transformed and moved. And at the end of the day, Albert Einstein said this, everything is energy, and you can create the reality you want to create. It is not philosophy, it's physics. And energetically, I firmly believe the way you show up is what you will receive in return. And the universe is there, like, holding and providing that. And so that's how I want to show up in my life and think about things, and then for my business for sure.
Up next, get ready to hear about the evolution of Brightland and scaling the business.
I love that. I want to learn more now about Brightland. So you said that you went through this exercise, you overcame your fear, and now you've got the courage to start this company. What did you do first? Did you start this on the side of your full-time job? Did you quit your job and then go through all the steps to get it launched?
I started it part-time, or on the side first. I didn't feel comfortable diving in until I knew there was some kind of, I don't know, I was waiting for that sign or that moment where it would feel okay to do that. And so I kept my job. And I mean, the first, honestly, it's tons of Googling. Right? Google and YouTube have a lot of resources. And I always tell, like, potential entrepreneurs and entrepreneuristas this too, of like, the internet has more answers than we realize. And podcasts like these, I mean, back then, this was like 2017, 2018, there weren't as many podcasts like these, but this is such a resource. And yeah, I just think that people have more of the answers in front of them than they realize. And then I did also reach out to people who were very kind and took 10 minutes out of their day to answer very specific questions. Like, I would say, how did you find a particular type of bottle? How did you find this? And people did take time out of their day to do that. But I always reached out with, like, a specific ask instead of just being like, I'd love to pick your brain. So it was a combination of Google and those asks, and then just sitting down and starting to write out what were all the different steps and kind of moments that I needed to, like, match to start this.
When you were just mentioning, like, going to Google and trying to figure it all out, like, it just takes me back to when Courtney and I first started Social Fly and just trying to, like, figure everything out as we went. And one thing ended up leading to the next. And one of the reasons why we created our Entrepreneurista League community was so people wouldn't have to Google as much and could just come to the community and be like, hey, does anyone have a manufacturer, or, like, bottle did you use for this product? And then everyone's in there just, like, networking, connecting, because it's what we wish we had when we first started, and probably would have been helpful back in 2017, 2018 for you as well, it sounds like. So totally. Excited for you to get into the community now so you can see all this in there, because look, it's super time consuming just trying to figure everything out on your own. And do you have a co-founder or you're a solo founder?
I'm a solo founder.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it was crazy. And I think physical products are their own wild world, because there's the entire supply chain, there's inventory, there's ops, there's fulfillment, there's packaging. I mean, there's a lot happening there. And then there was the brand side, which was the, like, fun. I think that's the part that everyone gets enamored by and thinks is like glamorous and fun. And it's magical to create something that builds an emotional connection with people, but you got to deliver on that promise, which means that you need to have phenomenal product that you're getting to people on time in the right way. Customer experience needs to be top notch, and it's a full, I don't know, it's 360.
How has the company evolved since you first launched it? So what year did you launch the company?
Yeah, we launched at the end of 2018.
Okay, end of 2018. What was the first product and how did everything evolve from there?
We launched 2 extra virgin olive oils. We've always worked with family-run farms here in California. Every single one of our products is made in the United States. And we're really proud of that because we really see olive oil as a similar category as like wine. Mm. And I think California wine has had in the last like 20, 25 years has had this like beautiful kind of growth and story. And so we see the same thing happening with California olive oil and we want to be part of that. And so it's really wonderful for us to like support and champion these family-run farms and growers. So that's been a core tenet of the brand. We launched with 2 products, 2 olive oils, one that's better for like finishing and one that's better for like dipping. We called them Awake and Alive, coming from my like beauty days. I loved naming products. And so I just felt like, oh, I don't see whimsical names in food. I want to do that for our food, for my business. So launched direct to consumer with our own website. But even on the first day, we actually got some interest from small retail shops and gift shops. So, you know, quickly sort of started, you know, snowballing. And now we're, I don't even know. I mean, we've sold probably in the million. I don't know yet. I don't know. bottles. And we have a big team, and I have a COO who is amazing and an amazing team of employees. And we've launched a slew of other products since. So,
what other products do you sell now?
Yeah, we sell infused olive oil. So, like garlic, chili, rosemary, basil. We sell vinegars, a blackberry balsamic, and a citrus champagne vinegar. We got into honeys a couple of years ago. So, we have 2 really gorgeous, like wildflower and orange blossom honeys. And then we last year came out with something called pizza oil. It's a blend of jalapeno and herbs, and it's just so perfect for drizzling and like dunking your pizza crust with.
Mm, and people I do have, that.
Yeah. People have loved it. So that's been a fun product.
How do you decide what products you want to launch next?
It's like a combination of what is the customer really asking for actively? Like people were asking about vinegars. People were asking about, we have this like brushed gold spout that we put on our bottle that people can put on their bottles. And people were asking, hey, I want some kind of like easy pourer. So when people ask, we definitely want to deliver. And then for the things that people don't ask about, it's a combination of what are we excited about? What doesn't exist already? What do we have a particular point of view on? And sometimes there's like just passion. Like everyone loves pizza. My dad made pizza like all the time for me growing up, and like homemade pizza. I don't know. It was just this feeling of, I think there's something here. Mm-hmm. And we were right on the money. And we haven't always been right either. I think that's the cool thing, like to be able to test and learn and be okay with not everything is like a hit from day one, but you learn every time.
Yeah. What were some of the mistakes that you made?
Oh my gosh. So many mistakes. I mean, we've had like label mistakes where the labels and the bottles didn't get along. And so all the labels were really like crunchy and crunched up. And we've had obviously supply demand mistakes where we completely thought that something would last 3 months and it lasted 8 days. And then we're stuck with being out of stock. We're out of stock right now with the pizza oil because of that, from a supply demand standpoint. I don't even know. Just so many mistakes. Like it's constantly, I don't even know if I can call them mistakes. It's always like, okay, we learned.
Yeah, learning lessons.
Yeah. Yeah.
What are your learning lessons from those mistakes? So like when you, you know, haven't estimated the right supply that you need or when labels get messed up, how do you make sure that you're not repeating those? And what can everyone learn from some of the learning lessons?
It depends on what stage you're at. Each learning lesson happens at different stages. So for us with supply demand, now for us, it's, hey, we need to have the right, it's not just enough to have an inventory management system. It needs to be the right one. And we need to have the right person not like on the team figuring out what that looks like. When it was the label mistake, it was me by myself with like a couple interns. And I remember thinking, oh, the next time I do this, I will make sure to get sample bottles and like triple check before I just assume. I actually think that is one learning lesson that I would share is like, I think we make a lot of assumptions. Hmm. You assume that a partner knows, you assume that it's been communicated, you assume. And if there's anything I've learned on this journey is never assume. Just over communication is key. And like, just double check too.
Trust but verify.
Trust but verify. But then also be comfortable with the learnings too, because I also see people over index on that and then they never get started or they're too like they want it to be so perfect that they're hanging on for too long. And I also think there's something to be said about just like letting things out in the world, like, yeah, putting things out in the world and then seeing what happens too.
Yeah, Stephanie and I are big proponents of just get started and get things going and learn as you go. So couldn't agree more. Thank you for sharing that. I'm curious, did you raise money before launching the brand? What has been the driver of this really significant growth in such a short amount of time?
Yeah, we didn't raise money before starting it. And for the first year and a half-ish, year plus, I didn't raise any money. We got to a place where we were saying no to a lot of opportunities and it just was time for it. And I needed to hire. And so I did go out and raise money and we've raised a couple of rounds of funding. We're still, I would say like, we have not overcapitalized the business at all. We've been really careful and thoughtful about that. But with a product business, I think, you know, in order for us to kind of reach our full potential of where we think the company could go, we wanted to make sure that we were doing right by the company and making sure we had the capital to reinvest into the business.
How did you decide to raise venture capital versus finding alternative sources of capital?
Well, I had worked at startups and so tech companies. And so I was very familiar with this model of VC. But I knew I didn't want, at the time, actually tech VCs were investing in physical products. Mm. And I was like, okay, I don't want that. So that was something that I said no to, like in the sense in my head, I didn't want it because I knew that they were investing in physical products, but wanting the growth to be like software companies. And I was like, I just don't see that. That doesn't fit. And so then I asked around, I asked other founders like who were maybe a few years ahead. Some people had raised from these tech VCs and were happy. Some people raised from them and were miserable. And then I chatted with people who raised from other types of investors, people who usually invest in actual CPG brands or in restaurants or other types of, and that was really eye-opening to know that there are other folks out there. And so we brought together a really nice mix of people. And I will say every single person investor I met came through a contact of mine. It was all through, and it was all mostly through other founders. So that's where also that community is everything.
Are there other learning lessons you can share from your process of raising capital?
Well, right now the markets are weird. So for anyone listening who's trying to raise right now, I don't even know what to say because I think it's really an odd, quiet, tough time. It's always been tough. I mean, but I think right now it's exceptionally tough. When I raised, I mean, know your stuff, you know, like people are going to ask, how much are you raising? At what valuation? Is it a safe? Is it a convertible note? Is it an equity round? And I've asked founders who are like, I'm thinking about raising. Can I pick your brain? And I'll ask them these questions and they can't answer that. And that to me is not, you're not ready if you can't answer those three very simple questions. How much are you raising? What kind of structure is it? and what type of valuation or cap or like, what are you doing? You know, I think that you got to know your stuff, and there's a little bit of fake it till you make it that's involved in that, like the confidence and the, not that piece of it, but just knowing you got to be able to talk about what you're doing, but also where you're going. Mm-hmm. And I see a lot of entrepreneurs lean way too much into, here's what we did. Let me show you what we did. Everyone wants to see where you're going. Mm-hmm. It's like current reality and desired future state. You better be able to talk about the desired future state a lot and paint a really amazing picture. And not so like crazy that somebody's like, this is outlandish, but something that gets people really excited.
So where is Brightland going? What's the big vision?
What's my desired future state?
Yes. What's your desired future state?
I think for us, like our core vision and mission of why we're here, like beautiful, delicious olive oils and other products that bring a lot of happiness. We could talk about being a happy, wholesome brand. Like that's the just feel. We want to be warm and inviting. And I think honestly, like the reason for being that I talk about a lot is I want to inspire people to be off their phones and devices at the end of the day. Mm. And if our brand and our products can be a conduit for that, then I love that. That's really why I think I started the company. I wanted to be like live a little more analog, not be so tied to my phone all the time. And I think food, cooking, nourishment, and like connection helps with that.
Yeah.
So if Brightland products and the products that we have get to serve that mission, great.
Talk to us about your marketing strategy from when you first launched the business to where you are today. And how did you create the brand and convey all that you have just shared with an audience to feel the way you have made people feel?
I know. I honestly, this sounds so stupid. Sometimes I don't know. Like I've chatted with customers who tell me what I just said to you, that that's how they feel about Brightland. And I'm like, I don't know how we did that. But tactically, you know, when we launched, I brought on a PR firm and I was like, okay, I think PR is important for the business. So I want to invest in it. So that was something we invested in. And I also want to caveat and say that what worked in 2018 or 19 probably will not work in 2024. So for anyone listening, please don't think of this as playbook. It's just our experience at the time, what worked. So yeah, so PR was something we leaned into. We started our Instagram 6 months before the brand launched. So we had like a couple thousand followers. We never bought any followers or anything, but we had a couple thousand followers even before we launched. And that was like, it was just people who were really intrigued by what we were creating. And there was less noise. So we were able to like break through.
What was that content you were creating on Instagram then to really build that community?
It was just, a lot of it was like found imagery, like really inspirational, cute, pretty stuff. And then some of it was quotes about olive oil, you know, that we did and like a cute thing. It was nothing revolutionary, but I think again, it was early enough.
It was early,
that
yeah.
People found some resonance with it. Didn't do reels, like that didn't even exist. And then, of course, we invested in, you know, other areas of marketing, like digital marketing. And we did events in the very beginning, very simple ones. And then now it's a full, I would say, it's like a full funnel marketing mix, mm-hmm. of like paid social, organic social, tastemaker, influencer, like gifting, community management. Like it's just the full thing.
Are you working with an agency now or agencies or doing it all in-house?
We do it all in-house, except for paid media is an agency. Yeah.
And what would you say, you looking back at 2023, because we actually just did this on the Social Fly side. We did a whole webinar on, you know, where brands should really focus in 2024. In 2023, looking back at where you spent your marketing, what really moved the needle for you?
It's a little bit of everything. So we launched this pizza oil last April and we decided to really devote like a 360 marketing plan for it. So, you know, organic, paid, we gifted a bunch of people like homemade fresh pizzas with the pizza oil the day that it launched.
You're going to be hungry.
We hosted a pizza party in New York, one in LA, that like at least 80, 90 people in each city attended.
Okay, I want to come next time.
so fun. Yeah, you have to come. I mean, it was really fun. And all of that created a lot of noise and momentum. And so I think it's important to say that, like, you kind of need all of it. You can't, like, it's, I would love to oversimplify and just say, like, take a dollar or take $10 and put them all in one thing. But I actually think that it's got to be spread out. Maybe six goes towards one and the other four go to, like, each other tactic or strategy. But yeah, I don't know if that's helpful. But
no, I think that's really important to share, because people have to see things many times in order to take an action. So to be able to show up where you're, you know, your brand's at an event and then it's someone seeing a Facebook ad and then their favorite influencer is talking about it. And then you get on the email list and now you get an email and now there's some special offer. Like, oh, I should probably buy this. Everyone's been talking about it. I've been seeing this for a while, where I feel like it used to be easier back in the day, like back in 2015, 16, 17, to like just run a Facebook ad and you're going to buy. Now it's like you said, there's so much noise. There's so many things coming at you. You really need to be everywhere. And then ultimately people will take that action.
Yeah, exactly.
Coming up, you're about to hear why Aishwarya decided to take a personal social media break, and she reveals her biggest business secrets.
How do you stay sane as a founder? You know, obviously there's always something new to test in marketing, always something new to do with the business, new product to launch. And then I always find, like, in a typical day, the best thing can happen and also the worst thing that can happen. So how do you manage all of the ups and downs?
Sometimes are better than others, you know? So I don't want to be like, all the time I'm just able to manage it. Some months, some weeks are better than others. But, you know, since the new year, I've been telling my friends, I'm sort of treating myself like an athlete, like really just good nourishing food and like the basics. It sounds stupid, but it is the basics. And it's also like breathwork and meditation are a big part of my life and they make a really big impact. I did it today and I'm in such a different headspace than a couple of days ago when I wasn't doing it for a few days. I think it's being grateful, like practicing gratitude. Like, nobody forced us to do what we're doing. We're doing it because we want to, and it is very much a privilege. And then also knowing that nothing lasts forever. We're all going to die. This is all very short. So having that perspective kind of makes you be like, what? We're not around for that long. Probably should make the most of it and be happy.
Absolutely. And what you were just touching on too, with like taking care of your body and your mind and eating well. I mentioned to you before we started recording the event that we're doing. So the whole theme of our event is wealth and wellness for founders, because if we're not taking care of our minds and our body, we can't take care of ourselves, our employees, our business, our family. So focusing on that is just so, so important.
I'm right there with you. It's much needed. And I think it's talked about a lot superficially, but what does it actually mean in practice? And it's different things to different people. I also think the other thing I'd add to that is spending less time on your phone and on social. Like, do what you need to do on social, but I think it clutters a lot of people's minds up a little too much.
Were you finding that you were, like, you yourself personally were just spending too much time on there because of the business? Then you would just stay on Instagram or...
Yeah, yep. Exactly. Yeah. And then you're giving yourself excuses. You're like, well, I have to be on it, you know, for my company. But I deleted it 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago, and you don't need to be on it. And if anything, my brain has opened up because I'm not thinking about what someone had for lunch, who I don't really care about, that somehow their story is in front of me. My brain feels much less cluttered.
What did you delete? You deleted Instagram?
I deleted Instagram. Instagram and TikTok, yeah.
Off your phone?
Mm-hmm.
Will you still go on like your computer to check anything for the business, or no, you're just like done?
No. Well, I don't have my personal passwords. I actually don't know it. So I can't do that. But what I do have is the business on desktop. So I'm able to just check and just be like, oh, great. Like, our social manager did a great job today posting that, you know, that kind of thing. But it doesn't make me want to spend too much time on it. So
good for you. Was that hard to get off?
A little bit. There was this fear of missing out, kind of like, oh, are people going to message? But then everything becomes just quieter and clearer.
You just blew my mind. Okay. So how do you, okay. I don't know anyone that has done this. So how do you know what's going on with your family and your friends? You, I guess, text them or what other brands are doing, or like, where do you get your news?
Yeah. It's funny. You kind of still find out what's going on. Like I read the Times. I will spend maybe like 2-3 minutes on Twitter. So I'm not totally, you know, so then I'm like, okay, I scrolled through, I kind of know. And then I subscribe to some like industry newsletters. So then you kind of know what's going on with brands and, you know, trends. And then friends, I'm more present. And yeah, maybe the circle is a little smaller because you're not just like, oh my God, cute outfit, like to that person who you, but maybe that's okay.
Did you make an announcement or like share with people? Like, just want to let everyone know I'm not going to. Have people text you like worried about you? Like, were you posting all the time before? Like, deep dive into your social media usage right now.
Yeah. No, I wasn't posting that much where somebody's like, oh my God, what happened? But what I did do was in my Instagram bio, I put on an Instagram break, see you in the real world. And I've had a couple friends be like, oh, that's like, you know, I saw that. Just wanted to say hi type of thing.
Okay. But, okay, so yeah. No one's worried that you like fell off the planet and something terrible happened to you. That was my concern. I'm like, well, people are worried about you. They're,
no.
You gave them that heads up. Now, I thought I was doing really well and that I gave myself a 10 p.m. phone bedtime. So my new thing this year has been I have to put my phone down and be off of my phone and Instagram. 10 p.m., my phone goes down. But you've taken it to the next level, so you are my new inspiration now.
It's freeing. Even if you try it for a weekend, it's pretty freeing because it just, you feel like you've scrubbed your brain a little bit by doing it, to be honest.
So I have to ask you, what is your biggest business secret?
My biggest business secret is understanding and being okay with two things being true at the same time. I think that is very hard. I think we don't want to live in that world and our brains don't want to live in that world. But if you can do it, it will save you a lot of headache and heartache and all the things. Two things can absolutely be true at the same time. So for example, in one day, you can get some incredible news. So it was a really good day. And you can also hear something that bums you out. So the day also kind of sucked. And the two things can be true.
That is so true. And finally, what does being an entrepreneurista mean to you?
Tenacity and community. I think community, tenacity, and optimism.
I love that. Well, we have so enjoyed hearing your journey and story. And I didn't want to admit this on the episode yet, but I have not tried your oil yet. And I am heading right out to go buy it. So I'm so excited to, I didn't share this. I am a very big bread and cheese dipper with oil. So I love that. So I'm so excited to try it. So where can everyone find your products, buy your products, follow your brands, share all the places, and we'll be sure to link out to everything in the show notes.
Okay, amazing. Our website is brightland.co. On Instagram, it's We Are Brightland. We're in hundreds, maybe thousands at this point of retail stores, gift shops, Crate and Barrel, Nordstrom, all the things. And yeah, look out for our beautiful, white, colorful bottles. And Stephanie and Courtney, look out for some Brightland headed your way.
Oh my gosh, you are the best. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you again for being here. I'm Stephanie.
And I'm Courtney.
And this is the best business meeting we've ever had. Hey, thanks for listening and leaving us a 5-star review. We'd really appreciate it. And we'd love to stay in touch with each of you. You can listen to all of our latest episodes at entrepreneurista.com and connect with us on Instagram at entrepreneuristas. We'd also love to invite you to join the Entrepreneurista League, our private membership community for trailblazing women. You can head over to entrepreneurista.com/the league. We'll see you there.
wishing you a productive week ahead.